The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. Johnny Sestina and Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money. Managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you to create better financial habits. Envision your long-term goals and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of Johnny, Sestina, and Company are on deck to show you the way.
Good evening. Welcome to Managing to Be Wealthy. I'm John Sestina. With me tonight, Cole Hammack and Tyler Cook, both certified financial planners. And we're here to go through a field of questions and discussions that most people never really like to talk about. Wouldn't you agree, Tyler?
I agree, John. Dying's not fun.
It's not a fun topic. I mean, your mortality's before you, and then you become even more confused when we talk about disability insurance, if we can get to that tonight. But these are topics that must be discussed. You need to know about it. I mean, when you talk to folks, they don't have any idea of what they have sometimes, and they don't know what it covers or how long it lasts or what it does. And so hopefully we're going to go through this and give some ideas and options and help you understand what's going on. So we're going to start with the hard one, life insurance. So with life insurance, let's just break it down and let you know there are two kinds of insurance in broad terms. There's term insurance and there's cash value insurance. Now, what's term insurance? Well, term insurance is you go up to the betting window and you lay down $100 and you say to the insurance company, I bet you $100 I'm going to die in the next year. And they say, okay, sucker, we're going to bet you $100,000 that you're not going to die in the next 10 years. And if you die, you lose. And if you live, you lose. That's insurance.
Yep.
So you have to understand that kind of thing. Cash value insurance, we're going to spend a little more time on because that has to do with quote unquote savings accounts or buildup of cash. A lot of misunderstandings about right. that. So why don't we go through this a little bit and talk about the term insurance policies a little more in depth. I mean, there's all kinds of them. There's increasing term, decreasing term. There's permanent insurance. We'll get to that later and so on and so forth. So let's look at some of the life insurance policies. Cole, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, term life insurance, that's really the easiest one. So that's your pure death benefit. To your point, if you die, you get money. If you don't, you're out money and don't get money. But it's oftentimes the cheapest option available out there as well.
Well, it's cost effective.
Hey, well, right. Well said. Yeah, right. We don't want to say cheap when right. talking about products.
Right.
No, they wouldn't like that at all. And what are these things? What is decreasing term insurance, for example?
Yeah, that's actually an interesting one. So the way it works in term life insurance policies, the benefit to those is they, in many cases, have a level premium. So you're paying the same amount every year.
Right.
So your level term, you keep that same death benefit until the end of that term. But the decreasing, John, to your point, is that death benefit actually decreases throughout the life of the policy.
It actually goes to zero. Whenever the term ends, you have zero. What's increasing term insurance?
One more thing on decreasing, which if you think about it, that's actually how it should work conceptually, right? Because take a younger couple starting out that probably got a big mortgage, maybe young kids. That's when you need likely the most coverage, the most insurance death benefit amount. So you pick a 15, 20, maybe a 30-year term. If you do things right in the financial planning process, at the end of that 30 years, a lot of people want to be debt-free.
Yep.
So mortgage is gone. Kids are hopefully on their own. So you don't really need the insurance. There's really two scenarios where you might still need it that I can think of. And one would be if you want to make a gift at your passing to your kids or your family and you want to have a set amount set aside, whatever the amount is, you can use a permanent policy, which we'll talk about next, to do that. And the other would be if you have estate tax issues. So if your estate is greater than the federal exemptions, which right now it's the highest I can ever remember, John.
Right, me too.
Okay, it's a long time.
long time.
So it's, 11.4, I think, for each individual. So 11.4 mm-hmm. million. So together, almost 23 million this year. So your estate has to be above that in order to have tax issues. And there's people that do. But there could be a reason to have a permanent policy to pay the tax bill. Because if you don't do things right, the amount of your estate that's above that 22 million number, you pay 40% to Uncle Sam. So
only,
there's reasons.
Only 40%.
Only 40. They changed. Okay, it's 40. It used to be 50 and higher, but yeah. So term is great, though, for a lot of situations, and we're big fans of it because, again, we focus on the comprehensive nature of the planning process and look at all the moving pieces to it. And as you said, Cole, it's the most cost-effective.
Well said.
Thank you. Way to do that. And if you do it right, you can actually layer the term policies, too, which I don't know if we have time to get into that, but there's a lot there.
Well, yeah. We ought to talk about that, especially with term policies. I mean, I did that in my case. I layered term policies. Don't know how long you're going to live, and so you buy one maybe for 20 years, and then you buy 5 years later, you buy another one for 20 years. You're kind of layering over the coverage that so you don't run out at some terrible time.
Right. It's effectively another way to do this declining term coverage, right? Because those first 20 years are probably when you need the most amount, but then you're 21, let's say your first policy falls off, and you just have one remaining policy for maybe half of the total. So a lot of creative ways to do it, and we'll talk more about how to evaluate this because it's alphabet soup, John, like you said, with this stuff. And I think you always told a story, and I remember it from years ago, but I think it was the 60s or 70s. You said that back then the insurance brokers wanted to become investment managers or investment brokers, and the investment guys wanted to become the insurance people. And then it created a lot of these products, which we'll talk about, where it's a combination of a quote-unquote investment plus a life insurance policy.
Right. That's exactly right. That was a big mistake back then. We used to have banks where banks were banks, and we used to have brokerage houses where brokers, and now we have this configuration here that is not doing quite as well. So when you go to buy one of these term policies, you can buy 1 year term if you want. You just want it for the next year, and it could be renewable. So when you're buying these things, you'll see there are some options you can choose. So if you're buying 1 year term, you can have the autumn, it could be renewable every year without an exam, so that's really, really powerful.
So what does that mean for the premiums?
Well, golly, you wouldn't believe this, Cole, but I think they'll raise the premiums.
What?
You have it, my friend. I mean, how do you build those beautiful buildings downtown if you're raising the premiums?
There's a lot of money.
Crying out loud.
Yeah. A lot of money thrown around the insurance world.
Some people buy 5 year. You can lock in here, as you said, 20 or 30 year, you can buy that all. And so probably the greatest misnomer is when I hear someone say that term insurance is not permanent. That makes no sense. If you die and have the insurance, it pays. That's pretty permanent, right?
Right.
So what they're talking about, we'll get to, is the cash value type and the reasons why they're doing that. So this term insurance is reasonably simple. It's can be renewable. And the other thing you might consider adding is it can be convertible. So convertible to what? A Chevy or something like that? No. It can be convertible to a cash value life insurance policy. And why would you ever want that? Well, let's suppose you have a term policy and it's starting to run out and now you have some grave illness and you may not be able to continue the policy under the terms you've had before, so you convert it over and that can go on for the rest of your life.
Right, and when you do that conversion, obviously there's a cost.
Yes.
Right, because with these term policies, let's say you pick a 25-year term, maybe you're paying $1,000 a year, just picking a number, and year 26 comes around. Well, it's no longer going to be $1,000 to keep that policy there. It's going to skyrocket. It's going to be tens of thousands of dollars to keep it around. But that's when you would look at the convertible options and see what makes sense. Because, yeah, if you have a situation where you've got health issues and doctor gives you 6 months to live or something crazy like that, it might make sense to pay the higher premium, you know, for what it could pay to your family and to your estate.
Exactly. So the other kind, then, we talked about decreasing term. Why would you ever buy a decreasing term insurance policy? Why would you buy a policy that's going to go down to zero?
Yeah, well, I mean, to Tyler's point before, our goals change, our debts change, kids may be out of the house. So, again, young family, mortgage, kids. Well, once the kids are out, maybe the mortgage is paid off, we have a decreasing need for life insurance over time.
Yeah, you hear that a lot when you go to buy stuff. They used to sit you down, you want to buy a car, take a car loan. They want to sign you up for a term policy that's a decreasing term policy that covers the car loan. I'm going to suggest you would never want to buy a decreasing term insurance policy because every time you pay the premium, you're paying on less and less coverage. But you'll see later, all insurance is basically decreasing value.
I got a good story about that, John.
We'll do that when we come back, Tyler. You're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on 610 WTVN.
You're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy with fee-only financial planners of Johnny, Sestina, and Company. Expert advisors as seen in the Wall Street Journal, Financial Planning Magazine, Kiplinger's Personal Finance, and U.S. News & World Report. If you're looking for the latest stock tip or how to time the market, you've come to the wrong place. If you want help navigating all the moving pieces of what makes a financial plan successful, tune in and take notes.
Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy. I'm John Sestina. With me tonight, Tyler Cook and Cole Hammack, both certified financial planners, and we're talking about that wonderful subject that everybody loves to talk about and consider, life insurance. And before the break, Tyler, you said you had a story about term insurance or insurance.
Well, it was more of a, I guess, backhanded sales pitch or a camouflage sale pitch, however you want to say that. But I was listening on a phone call one day, and the insurance broker said, "You know, I hope this is the worst investment you ever make."
What?
Yes, that was exact words. We're going to talk about the investment piece of this with the permanent insurance, like whole life and universal life and so forth. But the reason why he said that was marketing pitch, right? So I hope it's the worst investment because why? Well, you have to die for it to pay off. So in the insurance world, people are often sold products, especially life insurance. They're not educated and don't go through the buying process. And so that's what we're going to give tonight, some tips about how to evaluate that and really make sure that you're getting what the right coverage and the right amount, because there's two different aspects to that.
Sure are.
And on the permanent side, John, whole life insurance is one you hear a lot about. And how long has that been around? I don't even know.
It's been around since I was doing plans with a chisel and a hammer and stone tablets. That's how long it's been around.
The original iPad, right?
Yeah, yeah. They didn't have the original. Yes, and the abacus was on the side, so it helped out a lot. But no, whole life insurance. But since then, they've added a whole lot of these stranger-sounding policies that we're going to talk about later. But whole life is basically what? It's a policy you buy where they say, okay, pay this premium, and every year you pay the premium, we're going to provide you, say, $100,000 benefit, and we're going to begin to increase your savings in the policy. So whatever that's going to do for you, is it really a savings account, Cole?
Well, that's the pitch, right? That's the marketing pitch.
Well, it is.
Yeah, and I laugh because yes and no. I'll say yes only because, yes, you can pull from the cash value in the whole life policy tax-free up to what you put into it. But no, in the event, and we've talked about this before, I'll say it again, term plus investing, the difference oftentimes makes so much more sense.
It sure does. If you're disciplined in your approach, you put the money into your IRA, for example, 401k, or even an HSA, some way to save the money on a tax-deferred basis. Because what you hear is, well, if you buy a cash value policy, that's growing tax-deferred.
Right.
Right? Tax. So that's it. And when later, you can take the money out. What's the problem if you take the money out of the whole life policy?
Tax.
Well, it could be tax, because if there's more benefit than your premiums, they're going to tax you on that. Right. But if you take the money out, the cash value, now that's supposed to be your money, right? Is that what we understand? It's supposed to be your money when you pay the premiums. It's cash value. It's a savings account.
Yeah, the air quotes around the supposed.
Well, then why is it when you take it out, they charge you interest on it? Why does it show up as a loan? And by the way, should you die, if you took out $10,000 out of this $100,000 policy and now you die, how much money does your family get?
Not 100. Subtract the loan.
Subtract the loan. They get $90,000. So you got to understand this stuff. This money in the insurance fund, we're going to talk about different ones that do have some where it is your money. But for the most part, this is not your money at all. If it were your money, you wouldn't have to borrow it. So you borrow the money out of there, and the loans on those policies are, even now, the rates are a little higher than they used to be. So be aware of that kind of stuff. So when you're looking at life insurance and you look at whole life policies, which are more popular, why do you think they're more popular, guys? Why is a whole life policy more popular? To whom is it more popular?
Commissions are higher.
Oh, did you notice that? If I bought a $100,000 term policy, well, maybe the premiums, let's say, is $100. But if I buy a $100,000 whole life policy, the premium could be, $500 or $1,000. And how are people paid on commissions? They're paid on the premium, not on the coverage, which if you were a salesperson, you would legitimately want to sell the one that paid $500. Your premium was $500.
Right.
There's no accusation in that. It just is. So when you hear this, when you hear the discussion of insurance, you do have to educate it. You do have to have some semblance of knowledge when you're talking to folks if you have no advisors to help you with this thing. So whole life insurance, obviously, I'm not a great fan of that. Do you think I
couldn't tell at all?
You can't tell that at all. I'm trying to hide it. You know, I'm trying to be discreet here.
And no bias.
And no bias at all. So, with the whole life insurance, that's it. And then what do we have after that,
guys? Let me kind of get into the alphabet soup, right?
Oh, so yeah, go ahead.
The universal life world, which, again, is another form of permanent coverage, right? It can be there. There's no term that's going to expire, so that's why it's called the permanent insurance. And, again, you get that tax-deferred growth aspect, but it's a little more flexible than the whole life coverage. There's certain guidelines, but, again, you get to kind of pick and choose your premium that you want to pay. Whereas take that term insurance policy, if the premium is $500 every year, that's what you're paying every year. But with the universal life, you can change the premium. And there's also options where those premium dollars go towards the death benefit and also the cash value. So you can see how convoluted it is, right? You've got the tax deferred aspect. You've got the savings aspect, obviously the cost involved, and then kind of the moving death benefit as well if you wanted to.
Well, but then we have another investment feature, guys. You're forgetting there are two types of insurance companies. Ones that do not pay dividends and ones that do pay dividends. Get excited.
Yes,
we have to buy these things because then we get dividends. And by the way, these dividends are tax-free. Is that exciting? I mean, don't
Sounds
you want
great.
Tax-free dividends?
Right now,
I mean,
excited.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to line up and buy that. I wonder why they are. Well, if you read the IRS rulings, you know why dividends are tax-free? Because they are a refund of overpayment of premium. That's the definition. And that's why when you receive them, so, you know, you may be paying a little more for a policy than you should if you're getting dividends. And I think there are fewer dividend-paying companies now than there used to be. So watch out for the dividends.
It's a lot less exciting when you say it like that, John.
I'm just trying to, you know, be funny or have fun or understand this stuff.
Got to make it light. We're talking about dying, right?
Right, yeah. Dying. Got to keep it light.
Yes.
I mean, when you get these dividends, by the way, there's several ways you can receive them. One is in cash, so you get a cash dividend every year. Another is you could use that dividend to buy term insurance on top of your regular policy. And another is you could use it to pay the premium that you have. And another is you can buy paid up insurance. What the heck is that?
Before we get to that, one thing on the dividend paying the premium. When you have a policy like this, and maybe you do, maybe it's one you had since you were a kid, your parents bought it for you or something like that. We've seen that scenario. Every year you should be asking for what's called an in-force illustration, which really shows the details, kind of the health of the actual policy. I can't tell you how many times we've seen the scenario where it's just kind of out of mind. The dividend was paying the premium. All of a sudden something changed, and now you've got a loan essentially that's accruing because the premium's not being paid correctly, and that really affects the health of the policy. And sometimes it's the only way out is to bring more cash to the table. Insurance agents hate that, right? But you bring more cash to the table to then bring the policy back to kind of that level watermark. So there's a lot involved with it, but again, as we get more complex into these permanent types of policies, you really need somebody else to guide you and help you discuss this.
Yeah, that's usually helpful because it is complicated. And, you know, we're going to get into some other things that policies that you may be familiar with, like, you know, where you work, you might have insurance.
Right.
And if you have that insurance, that's got to be a deal, right? Why are you laughing at me?
Sometimes
quit making those funny faces.
You always taught me to question everything, right? So I'm questioning, but it's sometimes a group coverage could be a good fit for somebody who may have pre-existing conditions.
Exactly.
Right, on the outside to go get their own policy. They may not be able to for whatever medical reason. So the group coverage may be their only option.
Right.
In fact, we've seen scenarios too where business owners may have that scenario where there is no group policy, but they may be able to belong to an association.
Correct.
For what they work in, for the industry they work in. And through that association, they can then buy the coverage. So a lot of pieces here to think through.
There sure are. Well, we've got more to go, and we're trying to cover all the steps and bases of the life insurance. And you're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on 610 WTVN. Managing to Be Wealthy. I'm John Sestina. With us tonight, Tyler Cook, Cole Hammack, both certified financial planners, and we are discussing a favorite topic of everyone, life insurance. So where were we, guys, when we left earlier?
Yeah, we just wrapped up Universal Life, talking through whole life policies, and there's another fun one out there, John, called Variable Life Insurance.
Oh, good. So the benefit varies as you own it? Is that what happens? It's like riding my motorcycle?
Exactly. But the way this works, where it differs a little bit, so your whole life policy, that's the cash value. Maybe there's some dividends. Maybe there's an interest accruing on that. Your universal life policy is the way that the cash value, that's typically invested in maybe an index fund or something that the company chooses. The variable life policies let you decide how that cash value is invested.
So it's an investment. So life insurance is an investment, Cole. I like that. That's great.
So a annuity.
Help me out with that.
Well, the thing is, it gives you, we'll say flexibility, but really at a cost. And the cost is actually having that bundled in a life insurance policy.
Well, it wouldn't be more any more expensive than buying a mutual fund, would it? Why are you laughing?
I like the question.
You like the question?
It sure would. It sure would, John.
Okay, very good. So what's the story, Tyler, as far as all these different kinds of policies? Are you excited about all those and jumping up and down and recommending them to everyone you know?
No, I'm just having flashbacks to my days of studying for the CFP exam, the Certified Financial Planner exam, and having to learn all this stuff the first time through. And it's hard to keep it straight. It really is. And even professionally, you know, we deal with a lot of different things, and it seems like there's a new product or a new offer that's out there every single year. So just trying to have some base knowledge about what's appropriate. And again, sometimes these permanent policies do make sense in our world on a day-to-day basis. Most cases, there's other ways to do it and more cost-effective ways to do it. But that's not to say that at some point you may not want one of these in your plan, depending on what your goals are. So again, being fee-only, we can say that, right? We're not sitting here having to sell a product. We just do whatever's best for the client. And sometimes that's the case.
And that's a big deal to watch out for, because we're giving straightforward recommendations as fee-for-service planners, and what you buy doesn't affect our income.
Right.
And that's a really important thing. So when you're talking to a financial planner, that's one of the questions. So if I take this recommendation, what's it cost me?
Yeah.
And that's not just the premium, but that what's it cost me as far as your fee and so on and so forth. Well, let's move on to that, and let's talk about buying life insurance at every age. Yeah, what, Tyler?
Before we do that, quick updates. We've got our retirement readiness workshop coming up. It's going to be on Saturdays, May 4th and 11th from 9 a.m. to noon. And this year we're doing that at the Fawcett Center on Ohio State's campus. And to learn more, go to managingtobewealthy.com. And on the top right-hand corner there, you'll see a drop-down for workshop. And it's got all the details. But this one is an extension of what we've been doing the last couple of years. Remember, the original workshops were more comprehensive in terms of just learning about financial planning. Now we're taking a specific topic, retirement. So if you're in retirement, if you're nearing retirement, if you just have questions about retirement, it really can apply to anybody. But we're going to talk about things like healthcare. Right? That's a big deal these days. Just saw another article about OPRS, the Ohio Pension program, that they're expecting the healthcare costs to triple over the next couple of years. That's the year 2024. And the cost per person right now is about $1,300, and they expect that to go over $2,000 per month. So healthcare and retirement's a huge topic. We'll be talking about that.
Didn't Battelle just recently talking about discontinuing that for
retirees? Yeah, Battelle here
as well?
In Columbus. Yeah, they talked about ending their retiree medical coverage. So this is a trend you're going to keep seeing. It's a big deal when you're retired. And in fact, in our planning, we've isolated the healthcare goal just as a standalone, because it's going up so much more than the cost of gas and everything else. We'll also talk about how to navigate Social Security, Medicare. Again, it's part of the healthcare costs. I mentioned OPRS. If you have an STRS pension plan, other pensions, how to evaluate which option's right for you. If you've gone through that, you know there's about 20 choices on how you can be paid. And so we'll talk about that. And then also just, are you really on track for retirement? Maybe you're not there yet, but you want to know what you need to do to get there. So very comprehensive. Again, the days are Saturday, May 4th and 11th from 9 a.m. to noon at Ohio State's Fawcett Center. And go to managingtobewealthy.com and click on workshops.
So they can find the information there and sign up for the workshops. That's terrific.
Yes, sir.
All right, good. So we're moving right along here with this life insurance stuff. And now we're talking about how to shop for a term policy. How do you go about that, Cole?
Well, I think the first thing to consider is where you are in life. So right now, I'm 26 years old. I'm recently married.
I don't believe it.
I have socks.
I'm so close. I'm so close to 27, guys.
Oh,
May 15th.
Oh, my gosh.
Then maybe I'll be okay.
All right.
But 26 years old, recently married. So the thought process is, what am I trying to protect if in the event something happens to me? And that should be the kind of the first consideration at all stages in life.
Mm-hmm. So when you hear, golly, I ought to buy a policy and create a savings within the insurance policy, is that exciting? Come on, don't smile at me. Answer.
We had a camera on Cole's face.
It's not.
We should.
That goes back to my the point earlier that I made of term and invest the difference. So as super exciting as maybe having that whole life policy with the growing cash value would be, John, if I maybe paid a more cost-effective premium, to Tyler's point, for a term life policy, knowing that maybe I need it for the next 30 years, and then invest whatever the difference may be in premiums between that term life policy, which should be substantially lower than any sort of whole life. And I would think long term, I'd come out ahead, yeah. Right?
But you're, yeah, so, at your young age, I'm sure that's true.
Yes.
So take your scenario for a minute, Cole. Let's just forecast, get our crystal ball out here, right?
Fun.
So let's say you buy a house, if you have kids, right? Those other things that come after recently married, right? Mm-hmm. If that comes into your play, how do you evaluate the amount of coverage and how much you need?
Well, I know there are a couple rules of thumbs, but really it depends on what's going to happen afterward, what our goals are.
Right.
So if our goal is maybe to utilize that life insurance policy or those proceeds to pay down debt or college goals,
right.
Well, that's going to increase what I need.
The key word that stood out to me was our, right? You and your spouse having this conversation. It's so difficult to have it with just one spouse and not have the other one there because think about it. We're talking about one of the spouses passing away. It's unlikely that both spouses die at the same time. So to have that conversation, it's a hard conversation to have with people that maybe haven't thought about it. But you need to kind of predict what your life is going to look like if your spouse isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to kind of, you get through the emotional part of it, of course, but then it comes down to the dollars and cents part, which, for example, let's say you plan to have kids. What term would you look at buying at this stage of your life? How many years would you want to cover?
At the very least, assuming the goal is to assist with college, would be to get them to and through their college education.
But what if they have like four super senior years in college, right? 8 years in college.
Right. We'll judge that as they're growing up. I trust I'll have a couple prodigies. That'll be great.
All right. Fair enough.
But
your bride is that bright, huh?
Exactly. She's a keeper. But that might beg the question. Maybe a 30-year makes sense.
Right. Right. A 30-year term. So you get the kids through college age and maybe a little buffer there too if you have more than one child, right?
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
So are you going to fund all those things now, or are you going to fund them as they occur? So when you have a child, if you have a child, that's when you fund the college and so forth?
I would think start funding now. So things like life insurance in particular, so I've done this with some of my clients, some of my younger clients, it's never going to be cheaper than what it is today. So at 26 years old, if I buy a life insurance policy, it's going to be less expensive, more cost-effective than what it may be if I'm 30 or 35 when that time comes.
Assuming health is the same, right? I'll push back on the never, right? There might be one exception.
Yeah, don't want to say never, but absolutely.
If you have a major health change and your health improves, you could get a lower premium.
I would be concerned where I am in life now, but yes.
I see what you eat, Cole, on a daily basis. Canes and Wendy's.
It's so Canes good, and Wendy's. They're so close. They're so close.
But no, you're exactly right. You've got to think through that part of the process and In your age, I think you're a perfect candidate for that layering approach we talked about, right?
Right.
Where you buy a policy that covers a bulk of your need up front, maybe the first 15 of the next 30 years, and then the remainder, you've got a little lower amount to get you through the rest.
Well, got to interrupt this conversation for us to take another break, but we'll be right back. You're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on 610 WTVN.
You're listening to Managing to Be Wealthy with fee-only financial planners of Johnny, Sestina, and Company. Expert advisors as seen in the Wall Street Journal, Financial Planning Magazine, Kiplinger's Personal Finance, and U.S. News & World Report. If you're looking for the latest stock tip or how to time the market, you've come to the wrong place. If you want help navigating all the moving pieces of what makes a financial plan successful, tune in and take notes.
Welcome back to Managing to Be Wealthy. I'm John Sestina, and with me tonight, Cole Hammack and Tyler Cook, both certified financial planners, and we are wandering through life insurance coverage and some of the terms and some of the thoughts. We're not talking about amount of coverage yet. I don't think we can give that carte blanche over the air because that's a very specialized approach. You have to know what you need based on who you are. But we've covered various kinds of insurance, and so now we're talking about updating your coverage. What's that all about, guys?
Yeah, so we talked about that first policy, maybe when, like Cole, in your example, right? Mm-hmm. But then along the way, as life moves forward, you got to perhaps update your coverage. And we'll close with talking about retirees and what they should be doing. But what should people look at, Cole, with updating the coverage?
Well, all of your life events. So what was your most recent major change? Did you just get married, or maybe worse yet, did you just get divorced?
Right.
That's going to adjust how much you need for life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Did we have a kid? Did we buy a house? There are a lot of considerations that should prompt you to start reviewing what you have and what you need then.
Yeah, and there's rules of thumbs out there of how soon or how frequent you should review it after an event, but our mindset is annually. Look at this stuff annually. Sometimes it is just like kicking the tires, everything's fine, changing the oil, not a major overhaul. However, when those life events do come, the bigger ones, if you've been doing that ongoing maintenance right along the way, you can act quicker and give better advice. And as the end consumer of the actual product, have that peace of mind knowing it's the right amount for you. So I think of scenarios too where it's, you know, we've seen so many things over the years in terms of people needing coverage at different phases.
Mm-hmm.
And then so one of the best conversations though is telling somebody, hey, you can get rid of that. You don't need that anymore.
Don't need that.
You don't need that. And they go, what? What are you talking about? And they're so used to paying it for all those years. And some people want to keep paying it. And it's fine. If it doesn't mess up your cash flow and it gives you that warm fuzzy and you sleep well at night, great. But there is some real value into doing it every year. When I mean doing that, reviewing the policy, your living expenses, and other assumptions, because that dictates often the amount and then therefore whether or not you need it.
Exactly. And in fact, that's what you should do with your financial plan anyway, is review it at least once a year, sit down with you and your spouse and discover what you still have and evaluate whether you still need it, whether there have been new products, new things happened in your life. You know, you have to make decisions then on what to do now. Don't wait till the incident occurs, because then you're in deep doo-doo.
Funny story about that on a related note. I remember sitting down, this is probably 10 years ago, with a young couple, recently married. Cole, basically what you're going through right now, right? And we go through the projection. We find, all right, this person needs, you know, about $2 million of coverage. And the husband goes, well, I'm not going to pay for her new boyfriend. You know? It was funny in the moment, and we can all joke about it, but think about that for a second. That is a real quandary for some people.
That is a big deal in estate planning, because when you do the estate planning, and if you have anything at all, really, you don't have to have a significant estate, then you're saying, wait a minute, you know, the next person is going to have my house and live a life based on savings and investments I've made. Can be a difficult conversation.
Yeah, and with younger couples, the likelihood of somebody remarrying is very high.
Yep.
And so you have to talk through that. So that's why I love what we do, because you're like a chameleon, right? You've got to be able to adapt to the different scenarios and really customize each case. But the next phase, Cole, is retirement. So
sure is.
Talked about first policy, changing it as you go through life. But then what happens when you retire? What are some things to take a look at?
Well, it really depends on where you are in your retirement. Are you financially independent? Do we still need maybe an income in some sources, or are we living maybe on a pension? That might be a consideration based on what we chose.
Let's talk about that pension.
Life insurance.
Sorry to interrupt you, but that pension's a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking of a scenario, too, where somebody elected their pension benefit before meeting with us or before meeting with somebody else to give them recommendations, and maybe they chose the single life annuity option.
Right.
Where it only pays out if that one person's alive. Well, what happens to your life if that person passes away? You no longer have that income stream that may extend the need into and through retirement to have that life insurance.
Correct.
It's a big deal. I've seen that a couple times. And it was with an employer who was cutting their benefits for retirees, kind of like we talked about what Battelle is considering.
Mm-hmm. No, it's scary, but an absolutely valid point. So something to consider if you were looking at a life insurance during our golden years, and also for maybe carrying debt into that. Do we still have a mortgage on the house?
There's all kinds of things are different today than they used to be, because people do go into retirement with mortgages now. Mm-hmm. And even other debt. They have car loans and so forth. So that insurance might be very, very necessary in the event one of you dies. Because if you are in retirement and something like that happens, how do you pay the mortgage? And
right.
That's a big deal.
Another one I'm thinking of is stay-at-home parents.
Right.
While you're both alive and working and everything like that, you may have the mindset that, well, that person's not working, not bringing in an income. Well, what happens if they pass?
Yeah.
You got to have child care coverage. Right? You've got somebody, whether it's a nanny or daycare place, whatever it is, you've got to factor that in, because there is a value there to the household
in
terms
is.
Of what that does.
I learned that lesson from a doctor. We were sitting doing their estate planning, talking about life insurance and so forth, and we just kind of cavalierly said, well, you don't really need life insurance on your spouse. I mean, you're making $500,000 a year, and she's not working. There's two kids. No big deal. He said, wait a minute. He says, if she were to die, he said, I would cut back on my hours because I want to spend more time with these kids.
Right.
Yes, I would have a nanny or something, but I'm going to be there. And so guess what happens to my income? It's going to go down. So you do have to consider all those aspects. But when people get into retirement in particular, they want to be empty nesters. And we're finding that today more people are going into retirement with mortgages. And I'm not exactly opposed to that, but for some folks, that puts them on a precipice. So be careful.
Yeah, that whole other conversation, right, about the mortgage piece.
Oh, yeah.
But
yep.
It becomes that anchor, right, in retirement. It prevents you from doing other things you want to do. And, again, it may be the anchor of why you still need life insurance.
Hard to believe you might need life insurance. You know, can you believe it? I still have life insurance.
That's the variable, universal, permanent, all that one, right?
No.
All right.
No. They're very straight term policies. And yes. They'll expire someday. So when you're planning your retirement, and if you're doing a plan, then you should be well situated when you hit retirement. You should have enough money to fund your retirement income. That's the big thing. And have money set aside for any unexpected consequences. You know, you have a special injury. And then you have to be concerned about, well, what if one of you has dementia?
Right.
Or one of you becomes terribly disabled from whatever. And so all these things enter into the question. So that's why there's a great deal of conversation. Real planning is about conversation. And getting it out front. It's not just a matter of, well, you know, you're making this much money a year, therefore let's use that and times 10, and that's how much life insurance you should have. That's not a positive way to do the calculation. So you have to walk through your life. What's happening? Do I have kids? Do I not have kids? One of my kids disabled. And what do we do about that child? And what do we do about my spouse who's taking care of that child? And how do we provide income? And on and on and on. It's a very complicated situation.
Right, and I know we're running out of time, but another thing on life insurance, too, is when it's one thing to get the policy, but to really follow through all the way through the process, meaning naming the beneficiaries correctly.
Yes,
great point.
That's a huge piece, and Cole, we see that quite a bit. Yeah. Somebody will go through and do a real comprehensive estate plan and get all these fancy documents and documents they probably need, whether it's a trust or something else. And then what happens is the follow-through, there's a gap there where the attorney doesn't necessarily follow all the way through and hold the hand to update the actual life insurance policy.
Right.
They may give the recommendation, but seeing it through the finish line is another story. And that's called funding your trust. And a lot of times life insurance is one of the first things that needs to be updated in terms of the beneficiaries after you get that in place.
Right. And we didn't even get into who should own the policy.
Right. Right.
Should you put it in a trust or whatever. It's a very complicated area. And I thought we were going to get to disability, but I guess not, because we're running out of time. Well, we appreciate you listening. You've been listening to Managing to Be Wealthy on 610 WTVN.